Last Sunday night, we completed Revelation chapter 17, where John sees the judgment of the great harlot. The vision is given in verses 1 through 6. Two key figures, the great harlot herself, the woman, whose name is a mystery, and it is described as Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. She sits on a scarlet-colored beast, having seven heads and 10 horns, with full of names of blasphemy. And so we see the vision given there in the first 6 verses. Verses 7 through 18 give us the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carried her, kind of in reverse order. We see he really talks about the beast first in verses 7 through 14, talking about who the beast is, the relationship of the beast to the seven heads and to the 10 horns and so forth. And then the last 3 verses we looked at last Sunday night deal primarily with the focus on the woman, who she is. And we see that in the last verse of chapter 17. The woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. When we look at the two things that are described here, the beast and his kingdom, that the kingdom of the beast is the final kingdom in the times of the Gentiles that Jesus describes in the book of Luke. This final kingdom is the feet and the toes of the image that was in Nebuchadnezzar's dream in Daniel chapter 2. It is the final beast that is described in Daniel chapter 7. And we talk about the fact that most commentaries believe that this is the revival of the Roman Empire, primarily because the legs of the kingdom before it are iron, and then the final kingdom is part iron and part clay. So people think it's going to be a revived Roman Empire. And that the woman, therefore, is the religious system associated with Rome, and that the woman would therefore be papal Rome or Romanism or Catholicism. And I certainly think that this is the final kingdom of Gentile rule is going to have some of the characteristics of Rome. It's going to have that aspect of the strength of Rome and the cruelty of the Roman Empire and the way they crush their enemies. I think that'll be true. But if you look at Revelation chapter 13 for just a second. Look at just the first 2 verses. John says, I stood on the sand of the sea and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now look at verse 2. The beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And we're not going to look at anything other than the fact that if you'll go back in Daniel chapter 7 and look at the beasts that are described, that are the first kingdoms or empires that rule over Jerusalem and over the people of Israel, those are the same 3 animals. And so I think that indicates that all of the characteristics of the previous empires, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, all of them, in one way or another, are going to be reflected in this final kingdom. The ultimate power that they had will be seen in the power of the Antichrist and his rule over the earth during that time of tribulation, especially the last 3.5 years. The woman, the great harlot that we saw, is specifically said to be that great city which rules over the kings of the earth. And it's given a name in chapter 17. It is Babylon the Great, the city that is the mother of harlots and is the mother of the abominations, which is associated with idolatry. I think that Babylon is going to be the capital city of a religious system, a worldwide religious system of worship centered around idolatry. Some people think that's what Babylon is. I think it's certainly the capital city of that system. There will be a system of religious worship and idolatry that all the kings of the earth will have part in. They'll commit fornication with her, and the inhabitants of the earth will be made drunk with the wine of her fornication. That'll be true. But I think Babylon itself is a literal city that's going to be rebuilt and is going to be the center of the beast's kingdom and the center of this worldwide system of idolatrous worship. And so what we're going to see in chapter 18 is that this city, along with this system of idol worship, is going to suffer a devastating fall in the future. And to reiterate some of the prophecies, I want to look at just a couple of passages. One is Isaiah 13. I know we've read portions of this, but I just want to focus on just a few verses tonight that go along with what we see in Revelation chapter 18. The more I studied this the last couple of weeks, I thought I could have made 4 lessons out of this chapter real easy. But I don't want to extend it that far and get that much detail into it. But it is kind of fascinating to look, especially the comparison between Jeremiah chapter 51 And Revelation chapter 18, the pairings in there are just amazing how many things there are. It makes it very clear. This is exactly what Jeremiah is prophesying about. Isaiah chapter 13, verse 1 identifies that this is the burden against Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz saw. But look at verse 9. He makes this statement. He says, "Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, empty, and he will destroy its sinners from it." Again, the idea that it's associated with the future is the fact that he refers to it as the day of the Lord. That's a future day of God's judgment. It'll be a day of his wrath. It'll be a cruel day. It'll be God's anger poured out. But the land of Babylon in particular will be left empty, desolate. He will destroy the sinners who are in it. Look at verse 19, same chapter. "And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms," he says, "the beauty of the Chaldeans' pride will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It will never be inhabited, nor will it be settled from generation to generation, nor will the Arabian pitch tents there, nor will the shepherds make their sheepfolds there. But wild beasts of the desert will lie there. Their houses will be full of owls. Ostriches will be there. Wild goats will caper there. The hyenas will howl in their citadels, jackals in their pleasant palaces. Her time is near to come, and her days will not be prolonged." Now, I do not believe that that happened in the days that the Medo-Persians conquered Babylon and destroyed Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. So, for the city of Babylon didn't suffer that kind of fate. But it will in the future, and that's what we're seeing described. Here it talks about it will never be inhabited again. It will never be settled from generation to generation. This will be a total destruction of that. Now, look in Jeremiah, the next prophet over, Jeremiah chapter 51. And again, there were a lot of verses, and we may come back and look at a couple of these. But as you look at these verses, I think you're going to especially see what you see Jeremiah prophesy. We're going to see in the pronouncement that is made in Revelation chapter 18 about the fact that Babylon is now fallen. Now look at verse 1 identifies this as, "I raise up against Babylon." This is a prophecy against Babylon. Then go down with me to verse 6 and notice the wording. And keep these thoughts in mind as we approach chapter 18 of Revelation. He tells his people, Israel, "Flee from the midst of Babylon, and everyone save his life. Do not be cut off in her iniquity, for this is the time of the Lord's vengeance, and he shall recompense her." Babylon was a golden cup in the Lord's hand that made all the earth drunk. The nations drank her wine, therefore the nations are deranged. Babylon has suddenly fallen and been destroyed. Again, looking at the history of what happened to Babylon, that never happened. They were not suddenly destroyed and suddenly fallen. It says, "Wail for her, take balm for her pain. Perhaps she may be healed. We would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her, and let us go down, everyone to his own country. For her judgment reaches to heaven and is lifted up to the skies. The Lord has revealed our righteousness. Come and let us declare in Zion the work of the Lord our God." And that is this work in judging this wicked city. So this prophecy, I don't believe, was fulfilled in those olden days, but it will be fulfilled in the future. And that's what we see described in Revelation chapter 18. Let's go there and look tonight at this portion of Scripture. After John saw the events of Revelation chapter 17 and the judgment of the great whore, he says, "After these things," verse 1, "I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory." This announcement comes from a very powerful angel. An angel sent from heaven, an angel that had great authority from God, and an angel whose glory, that was the earth was illuminated by the glory of this angel in making this announcement. And it says that the angel cried mightily, powerfully, with a loud voice, saying, "Babylon the Great is fallen." And to emphasize it again, and to emphasize the extent of the fall, it says, "is fallen and has become a dwelling place of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird." Again, this goes back to what it said in Jeremiah. The city is no longer going to be inhabited anymore after this. The only ones who will dwell there will be demons and evil spirits. In fact, I love the way it says this. It'll be a prison for every foul spirit. It'll be a cage for every unclean and hated bird. And that also seems to be associated with demons or evil spirits as well. So it says that's what's going to happen to Babylon. Now, look at verse 3. The reason for Babylon's fall is given very clearly. For all the nations, not just some or most, but all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. And so we see the influence that this city has had on every area of life. It's had an effect upon every nation. The inhabitants of all the nations have been a part of her idolatrous worship and a part of the rejoicing and the gladness and the merrymaking that's a part of idolatry. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her and have given their kingdoms over into the practice of these wicked things, the idolatry and the abominations. And the merchants of the earth have profited from her as well because of her luxury, because of the riches that are in that city. They have benefited as well. So this is why this nation or this city has had a terrible effect spiritually upon the whole world. And so look at verse 4. We saw this in Jeremiah. And I heard another voice from heaven. This is a voice from God. I don't know if this is God's voice or an angel's voice, but it's from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people." Now we saw that very same thing in Jeremiah chapter 51. And so he says, "Come out of her, my people." So I think he's primarily talking to Israel, his people Israel. That's who's really in view here. And says, "Come out of her for two reasons. One, lest you share in her sins. Come out of her so that you don't become a part of this idolatrous worship." Because you think about what that means for Israel. If you give over to the worship of idols, and you depart from a steadfast and patient worship and stand for the truth of God and His Word, what happens to you during the tribulation period? You can be lost completely. And so he says, don't be affected by her sins. Don't share in her sins. The second thing is, unless you receive of her plagues. The plagues of God, the judgments of God are going to fall upon this city. And there are going to be particular judgments that are coming from God that are directed specifically toward Babylon. Back up to chapter 17 for just a second. There's two different aspects of how this fall is brought about. One of them we see in chapter 17, the verses 16 and 17. We know that these 10 horns are 10 kings who have aligned themselves with the Antichrist during the tribulation period, particularly to fight against the Lamb, but they're also there to do, in a sense, his bidding. But notice what it says in verse 16. The 10 horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot. Now, I don't think this will always be the case. But eventually what will happen is that when they align themselves with the beast and go to make war against the Lamb, probably during the very last portions of the tribulation period, even the last portions of the last half of the tribulation period, when they do that, they're going to turn on the harlot. This is the city that's been the capital city of this kingdom, the capital city to be the center of this idolatrous worship. They're going to turn on her. They're going to make her what? What's it say? Desolate. Same thing we saw prophesied in Jeremiah 51. She's going to be made empty. They're going to be destroyed there. And she says, they will burn her with fire. You say, why would they do that? Verse 17 tells us, for God has put it into their hearts to fulfill His purpose. You see, this is God's way of bringing judgment upon the city of Babylon. Even He does it through these kings. Now that makes sense, because think about this. Back in the days when Israel, the people of Israel and Judah, departed from the Lord, how did God judge them? How did God judge Judah? He brought against them the kingdom of Babylon, led by Nebuchadnezzar. God used Nebuchadnezzar to carry out His purpose in judging His own people, Israel. Now it's going to turn around on them. It's going to turn around on Babylon. God has put into the hearts of these 10 kings to fulfill His purpose, to be of one mind, to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. Part of that will be to burn and make desolate the city of Babylon. The great harlot will be destroyed. Now, many believe that this is a particular reference to the idolatrous system of worship, that they'll turn against it because everyone is supposed to worship now one thing, and that's the beast or the Antichrist. So that's a possibility as well. The other thing we saw back in chapter 16 was the earthquake. When the seventh vial or bowl of God's judgment or wrath is poured out on the earth. There's a tremendous earthquake that divides the city of Babylon into three parts. And it talks about the city of Babylon was remembered before God, and God gave her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of His wrath, and that city is going to be destroyed. Here we see in chapter 18, here's where it's described and how it happens, and we see why it happens, and the warning given in verses 4 and 5 to the people of God, the people of Israel. Look at verse 5. Go back to Revelation 18, verse 5. Come out of her. He says, verse 5 says, for her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Now, that's, again, the very same thing we saw in Jeremiah chapter 51, that her sins are so terrible that they have reached to heaven, and God is now going to respond to them. God is going to judge them righteously. He remembers everything that this city and that this kingdom and that this system of worship has done all the way back to the days of the Tower of Babel, led by Nimrod in those days. And the wickedness that has been there, the idolatry that's been a part of that, the influence that Babylon has had upon the whole world to draw them away from God, God remembers that, and He now pours out His iniquity on them. Look at verse 6. Here's the standard of measurement. Babylon is going to receive exactly what she deserves. She will receive her just due. Render to her just as she rendered to you. Repay her double according to her works. And the cup which she has mixed, mix double for her. In the measure that she glorified herself and lived luxuriously, in the same measure give her torment and sorrow. For she says in her heart, I sit as queen, and I am no longer a widow, and I will not see sorrow. There's the boast of Babylon, is that I'm the queen. I'm the queen bee, you might say. I'm the one in charge. He says, I'm no widow, and I will not see sorrow. I will never see that. They just block out the idea that judgment is going to come upon them and don't acknowledge it at all. And so verses 6 and 7 says, render to her exactly what she deserves. You know, think about what Babylon did to Israel. The judgment, the death, the captivity, the destruction of their temple. All the things that Babylon did to against God and against God's people and against God's temple and so forth. It says, pay her back for what she deserves. Pay her back for how she has lived her life. She's lived in luxury and she's lived in glorifying herself. Has rendered to her what she deserves in all this. And we saw that same idea back in Jeremiah chapter 51, verse 35. It says that very thing. As Babylon did to Israel, so it will be done to Babylon as well in the future. And that's how it's been described right here. Look at verse 8. It says, therefore her plagues will come how? In one day. Now, what did it say back in Jeremiah? That she would be destroyed how? Suddenly. Or quickly. The destruction of Babylon would come suddenly or quickly. That's never happened in the past. That will happen in the future. That's what's described here. Her plagues will all come in one day, probably associated with the pouring out of the seventh bowl of wrath. It will probably all happen in that day. What will come upon her is death and mourning and famine. And she will be utterly burned with fire. We saw that back in chapter 17, verse 16. For strong is the Lord God who judges her. God's judgment will be absolutely sure and it will be powerful. God will be able to do anything He wants, and this is exactly what He'll do. They will experience death. They will experience terrible mourning and grief and sorrow when all this happens. They will experience famine. They'll not have food to eat. The city is going to be completely and utterly burned. Burned to the ground is almost the idea you got here. And the people that are living there are going to be destroyed. For God is strong. The one who judges her has absolute power over her, and He will bring these judgments very quickly. In one day it will come. When we get to verses 9 through 20, it's interesting here. We see that all the people of the earth who will mourn and who will weep and who will wail because of what has happened to Babylon. You know, it's almost like we see this in our world today when something happens to those who are evil or wicked. People mourn that. Oh, that's terrible if that's happened. They don't realize sometimes there are consequences for sin. There is judgment from God to come. That's exactly what this is. This is a judgment of God. It's a righteous judgment of God. It's God's retribution upon a wicked and evil city for their practices throughout just not the tribulation period, but throughout their entire history of the city of Babylon and the people who are gathered there. But we've got three different groups who mourn for the fall of Babylon. All of them are on the earth. Okay, verses 9 and 10 describes the kings of the earth and their mourning for Babylon. Verses 11 through 16 describe the merchants of the earth and how they will mourn for Babylon. And then verses 17 through 19 describe those who are shipmasters, all those who are involved in anything that has to do with shipping or sea travel or anything like that, ships and sailors and trade on the sea. They will mourn as well. It's interesting. I was going through here and looking at it. It's interesting. It's almost like the same things are repeated for each group. They say the same things. They feel the same way. They weep for the same things. And we'll see it in the first one, the kings of the earth. Now, it may not be absolutely every one of them has these things, but most of them do. Look at verse 9 and 10. He says, the kings of the earth, the ones who committed fornication, the ones who followed after her in their worship and their service of idols. He says, the kings of the earth who committed fornication and who lived luxuriously with her, they benefited from Babylon's luxury. Babylon's glory and luxury was something that the nations or the kings of the earth benefited from. And so the ones who did that, it says, they will weep. They will lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning. And again, we saw that described. That would certainly be the case maybe with an earthquake, but also the description of the kings of the earth and their armies, those 10 kings and their armies coming against Babylon and destroying it. They're gonna see this. Look at verse 10. Standing at a distance. Now, the kings are not going to be a part of the city, because if they were in the city, what would happen to them? They're going to be killed as well. So they're outside the city, and so they're there, and they're watching this happen. They're standing afar off, and they see her burning. It's kind of like Abraham looking at the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah burning and viewing that. These are going to look at this situation here, standing at a distance for fear of her torment. Or fear that they would be caught up in it or be a part of it, that they would be destroyed with it as well. What do they say? Verse 10, saying, alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city. Oh, this was such a wonderful city. This was such a powerful city. This is a great city. It was such a blessing to all the world. I'm sure is how they'll look at it. It says, for in 1 hour your judgment has come. So those are the things we see. They will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning. That's the second thing. They'll see it standing at a distance for fear of being part of the torment themselves. They will say, alas, alas, for that great city Babylon. And they will mention that in 1 hour, your judgment has come. Quickly and suddenly, all of a sudden, the city was there. It was thriving. It was the center and capital of the world. It was the center and capital of worship and commerce and trade and everything you can imagine. And all of a sudden, it's gone that quickly. It's gone that quickly. And that happens in life sometimes, does it not? I mean, if you build your life on amassing the fortunes of this world, the treasures of this world, or you seek to gain satisfaction through the pleasures of this world, how quickly can all of those things go away? How quickly can all of that fade and just be gone in a day? And so they lament and weep and sorrow that that city is no longer there to give them what they benefited from so long. Look at verse 11. The same thing with the merchants. And the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her. Now, here's the reason why for them. For no one buys their merchandise anymore. It's not really like they cared that much about Babylon, except that with Babylon flourishing like that, we made a ton of money. We sold a lot of goods. And with Babylon destroyed, you know, we don't have that center of trade, that center of merchandise in the world, that center of luxury and glory. It's not there anymore. We don't have anybody to trade with anymore. So all that's going to be gone. No one's going to buy our merchandise. And so they're weeping and mourning for selfish reasons. And I'm sure the kings of the earth, that's true of them as well. But then he says this, the merchandise. And he lists the way, all the things that it breaks down into. It's kind of in groups. Merchandise of gold and silver, precious stones and pearls. So you've got jewelry. Okay? All sorts of jewelry that are there. Things like fine linen and purple, silk and scarlet, so fine cloths, those types of industry and so forth. Fine linen, purple, silk, scarlet, all the things that the kings would wear, that rich people would wear, all of those things are there. Every kind of citron wood, every kind of object of ivory, every kind of object of the most precious wood and bronze and iron and marble. Interestingly enough, what do they use all of those things for? At least one thing they use them for. Idols. Every one of those are objects, are materials that can be used to make idols. And all of that's going to be gone. So every kind of wood and ivory and bronze and iron and marble, all the objects that they use, furniture, idols, whatever you would make from that, all that's going to be gone. It's going to be destroyed as well. He says the wine, I'll go way back up, cinnamon, verse 13, cinnamon, and incense, and fragrant oil, and frankincense, and wine, and oil, and fine flour, and wheat, all of those things as well. You've got the spices, cinnamon, incense, fragrant oil, frankincense. You've got wine and oil, fine flour, wheat, which is all used to make food, bread, those types of things. You've got cattle, sheep, horses, chariots. And look at the last thing in verse 13. And the bodies and souls of men. And that would be a part of the trade as well. We talk today about sex trafficking and things like that, sex slavery and things like that. You think that's going to stop in the future? No, it's going to increase even more and more. So the bodies and souls of men will be a part of this as well. He says all of that will be gone. That merchandise will no longer be able to be bought and sold, and people will lose their benefits. So basically, look at the summary of it is given in the last verse. Verse 14, the fruit that your soul longed for has gone from you. Now, it wasn't the right thing to long for. It wasn't the right thing to desire. It wasn't the right thing to set your heart on. But everything that they set their hearts on, everything they longed for and wanted to have a part of and take pleasure in and make money from, he says, all of these things are gone from you. All the things which are rich and splendid have gone from you, and you shall find them no more at all. Interesting way he puts it. I love the superlatives that are used in Scripture sometimes. You can be fine to say you'll find them no more. No, you'll find them no more at all. I mean, no, they're not going to come back. There's no possibility. What you longed for, what you desired, what was wonderful and splendid and rich and abundant to you, it's all going to be gone forevermore. Never, never, never there again. And so that's what he points out to them. So the merchants wail for those things. Look at verse 15. He says, the merchants of these things, who became rich by her, will stand, where? At a distance, for fear of her torment, weeping and wailing. What will they say? Verse 16. Saying, alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls. We saw that very same description back in chapter 17, that the woman, the harlot, adorned herself so that when she was presentable to the world and was something to be desired and so forth. All of that, the merchant said, all of that's gone. Alas, alas, that great city that was adorned in this way is now gone. For verse 17, what does it say? For in one hour, in one brief, quick, and sudden moment, such great riches came to nothing. It came to nothing. We go on from verse 17 on. We look at the shipmasters. It says in verse 17, every shipmaster, all who travel by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea. In other words, anything that has to do with travel on the seas and ships. Okay, whether it's trade, whether it's work, whatever it is, whether it's just travel. He says, what did it say they did? They stood at a distance. They stood and watched from a distance. And they cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning. Every one of these groups sees and does the same thing, saying, what is like this great city? And, we don't see the words alas, alas, but the idea is there. What is like this great city? How could this have happened? And so they threw dust on their heads. They cried out. When you throw dust on your head, what's that a sign of? Mourning. Yeah, grief, mourning, ashes. You clothe yourself in sackcloth and ashes. They threw dust on their head. They cried out, weeping and wailing and saying, alas, alas, that great city in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth. You see what they're worried about losing. They're losing all the riches, all the glory, all the things that they had. We've lost it all. For in one brief sudden moment, she is made desolate. And again, the same thing is said by every group. But the world will mourn the destruction of Babylon. Now, they won't have time to mourn just too long, I guarantee you, because soon after this, you're going to see things move very quickly to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. And they'll have reason to mourn for themselves, as well as to mourn for Babylon. But this is their reaction to it. When the city of idolatry and luxury and self-glory, when it comes to an end, when it exists no more, the world will mourn over that. They'll still curse God, they'll blaspheme God, but they'll mourn over the loss of this wicked and idolatrous city. Now, in heaven, there's going to be a different reaction altogether to the fall of Babylon. Look at verse 20. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her. The reaction in heaven will be the direct opposite of what the reaction on earth will be. The people in heaven, those who have lost their lives because of their testimony for Jesus Christ and because of their stand for the Word of God, especially during that tribulation period, but even going back ages before, they will rejoice. And the call is for them to rejoice. Rejoice over her. Don't mourn at all. Don't wail because of what happened to her. Rejoice because of what's happened to Babylon. He says, because God has now avenged you on her. Your blood that was shed by this wicked city and those who supported her, he says, has now been avenged. That's what they've been waiting on. That's what we saw back in Revelation chapter 6, verses 9 through 11. We saw the souls of those who were martyred for their testimony for the Lord, asking, Lord, how long is it going to be? And he says, it's got to go a little longer until others have lost their lives as well. But the judgment is coming. God will avenge. Jeremiah 15:51 prophesies that very thing, that it will happen. God will bring vengeance. And you know, it's a terrible thing to fall into the hands of an angry God, and that's what Babylon will do at this point in time. Again, she never thinks this happened. What does she say? I'm a queen. I'm no widow. I'm not going to see sorrow. It's going to come quickly and suddenly in 1 hour. Look at verse 21. Here is the extent of the destruction, where we see this same word is used over and over and over again, that Babylon will not be found anymore. Babylon will not be found anymore. Jeremiah 51, verse 29 says, he will make the land of Babylon a desolation and without inhabitant. There'll be no one to live there anymore. Look at what he says, verse 21. Then a mighty angel has took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, thus with violence the great city Babylon shall be thrown down and shall not be found. What's the last word? Anymore. Shall not be found anymore. A great millstone. I do want to go back to Jeremiah 51 and look at those. Keep your face right here. Jeremiah 51, look at verses 60 to 64. Look at the similarity in the prophecy that's given by God through Jeremiah to the people of Israel concerning Babylon. Jeremiah 51, go all the way down to verse 60. So Jeremiah, it says, wrote in a book all the evil that would come upon Babylon, all these words that are written against Babylon. And Jeremiah said to Sariah, when you arrive in Babylon and you see it and you read all these words, then you shall say, O Lord, you have spoken against this place to cut it off so that none shall remain in it, neither man nor beast, but it shall be desolate. How long? Forever. Desolate forever. Now it shall be, when you have finished reading this book, that you shall tie a stone to it and throw it into the Euphrates, the river. And then you shall say, thus Babylon shall sink and not rise from the catastrophe that I will bring upon her, and they shall be weary. And thus far are the words of Jeremiah. Tie a stone to the words of this prophecy. Throw it in the river Euphrates. Now, not exactly the same thing, but the mighty angel takes a stone like a great millstone that's used for grinding grain and says, and throws it into the sea and says, this is an illustration of what's going to happen to Babylon. Because that huge millstone, what's it going to do in the sea? Throw a millstone in the sea. What's it going to do? It's going to sink to the bottom. How easy would it be to get it back up? Yeah, no. You just wouldn't mess with it. That's going to be true of Babylon. It's not going to be found anymore. Go back to Revelation 18. Look at verse 22. What does that mean? Think about what this city is going to be. This is all going to come with violence. This is all going to come with violence from God. It says in verse 22, the sound of harpists, musicians, flutists, and trumpeters shall not be heard in you anymore. No music. There'll be no music in this city ever again. Okay? He says, no craftsman of any craft shall be found in you anymore. And the sound of a millstone shall not be heard in you anymore. Working craft, working with brass and iron and gold and anything that's made with those things. Anything that is artistic and so forth. Anything that is done with a millstone to grind and make bread and to make things and to create things. All of that's going to be gone. Those sounds will never be heard in Babylon anymore. Verse 23, the light of a lamp shall not shine in you anymore. It's going to be a city that will be cloaked in darkness from that day on, because it's just empty. The voice of the bridegroom and the bride shall not be heard in you anymore. When you have a wedding, a bride and bridegroom, what is it like? It's a celebration, is it not? There's singing, there's dancing, there's music, there's joy, there's laughter, there's food, there's entertainment. All of that's a part of it. And those sounds, it says, will never be heard in Babylon anymore. Entertainment will be no more there. Weddings, normal family activities will not be found in Babylon anymore. Now, look at the last part of verse 23. Why is this the case? For your merchants were the great men of the earth. You influenced the great men of the earth and drove them in the wrong direction spiritually. For by your sorcery, all the nations were deceived. Satan used this city. He will use this city in the future to mislead the people of the earth, to mislead them away from God and away from the Lord Jesus Christ, to worship the beast, to worship Satan himself, to get involved in idolatry and worldliness and worldly pleasure. He says, and you were the center of this. You deceived the nations on the earth because of this. Verse 24, and the last thing is because in her, in Babylon, was found the blood of prophets and saints and of all who were slain on the earth. We saw that same statement made back in Revelation chapter 17, verse 6. I saw the woman drunk, intoxicated, with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And John says, when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. And he might have marveled again when he saw then in chapter 18, here's what happened to her. She fell. And she fell so completely and into such desolation that she was not found anymore. It's an interesting thing. When we move on into chapter 19, which we won't do for several weeks, but when we get there, we're going to see basically a picture of another city. We see just a glimpse of it in chapter 19. But that other city is the city of God. Okay? This is the city of the world. This is the city of the beast, the Antichrist. This is the city of Satan. But this city we're going to see in chapter 19 and on through chapter 22 is the city of God. It's the New Jerusalem, which is descending out of heaven from God to the earth, to a new earth. It will be prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. It will be a city in which there is music and rejoicing. And the brightest of lights you can imagine, it will be so opposite of what we see, what's going to happen to Babylon. We'll see the very opposite of that happening with God's city, the New Jerusalem. This will be the center of the new earth. This will be the center of Jesus' kingdom here upon this earth, the eternal kingdom, which he'll rule and reign. Israel will rule and reign with him. The 12 apostles will sit on 12 thrones. It'll be a beautiful place that God will dwell with them. There'll be no more sin, no more sorrow, no more death, no more famine. All the things of the earth will have gone away. And it starts in a sense with Babylon being destroyed in this way. It's kind of the beginning of that. The purging of the earth begins with this great city. Okay, we're going to stop right there.